Let's try and have a conversation with you today. Eric, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Staying cool inside. I have my air conditioner set to 78 degrees, just like Zoran Mandani wants me to, the new socialist republic.
Is that 70? What does 78 feel like? I'm in a studio and it's probably 70 degrees in here. What's it like where you are?
It feels fine. I don't quite understand what all the fuss was. Now, this is a story. It's a couple of weeks old by now, but if you remember that Zoran Mandani, the mayor of New York City, put out a tweet suggesting that New Yorkers ease off on the power grid by setting their air conditioners up to 78, and people acted like this was jackbooted communist thugs breaking down their apartment doors and turning up their thermostats. And it feels fine. And, 78 degrees is just not bad.
But, I saw somewhere that previous Republican administrations or experts, conservatives, have argued for that in the past, depending on who's in the White House, I guess. But it's not terrible advice, but it's also not terribly comfortable. 78 is a little clammy, isn't it?
It's not bad. It really is. I guess it does depend a little on the humidity. But there have been advisories in the state of Texas and the state of Georgia to set your thermostats to 78. And the Department of Energy under Trump, in 2019 or something like that, it was during his first administration, issued an advisory saying that 78 was a good temperature to set your thermostat at. And also in other states, when there have been cold snaps, and in order to ease the pressure on energy, they've asked people to turn their thermostats down. Remember, Jimmy Carter wanted us to wear cardigan sweaters and stuff. So if these were like orders, if they were going around to your house and checking your thermostat, that'd be one thing. But just as a recommendation, because if the power grid gets overloaded and there are brownouts, blackouts, then you could actually see people dying. If you remember the heat wave was at 1995 in Chicago, where there are hundreds of people died during the heat wave. So if you had a power outage, there'd be a lot of vulnerable citizens.
The refrigerated trucks at the morgue, they have a version of that in France, or did in Central Europe this year, where thousands of people, well, actually it was a previous heat wave where thousands of people died. I don't know what the death toll was by this heat dome that has passed over Europe, but it was many hundreds of people. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yeah, the power grid can only stand so much, and then if you've got to go to brownouts and blackouts to save the power grid, then you're going to end up with people who are compromised, health compromised, who are going to get either very sick or die. And so it's a friendly suggestion to turn your thermostat up. I don't think we're in that situation. Now, ours is that way because we're a little cheap, frankly. So
I was just going to say, if I came over to your house for dinner, say you and Johanna were having me and Brenda and maybe the Bertrands or Manfredini's over, would you have cranked it down a little bit for us?
Yes, we would. Of course we would, John. For you, we would ask in advance. You know how some people ask about like what your food preferences are? We would ask for what your thermal preferences are.
And I would say, well, I got bad news. I'll bring white wine, but it needs to be 72 inside. Otherwise, we're not going to stay. What are you writing in the Picayune Sentinel? Eric's also on our Mincing Rascals podcast. What are you writing about Father Flager today?
Well, this is the third time I've used the exact same headline on Father Flager commentary, and it's "Don't make up your mind yet about the sexual abuse accusations against the Reverend Michael Flager." This is really the third round of accusations against him. There was one in 2021, and then a year or two later, there was another one, and I think there are five people who allege that he had sexually abused or exploited them. And the Archdiocese conducted a thorough investigation, evidently, they said they did, and they found that those accusations were unfounded. At the time those accusations came out, I pointed out that, these accusations are old, and it's not fair to sort of automatically presume guilt on somebody's part. Let's wait to see what the investigation shows, what the evidence shows. And so I'm urging that again, let's remember that he is a controversial figure. And it is troubling that there are this many allegations against him. They are all oldest. The current one, I think, is 32 or 33 years old.
Yeah.
And it's very, very hard, I think, to establish whether something like that is valid or not, given how much time has passed. He has said in interviews or statements that he doesn't even remember the woman who has been a girl who launched those or is lodging those accusations against him. So rather than just say, okay, someone has made an accusation, let's tarnish him forever. Let's wait. It seems like the family.
Let me ask you this. I don't know if this is fair or not. Do you believe E. Jean Carroll?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I do, and I do because there was an extensive trial in which people who heard all the testimony and evidence concluded
that. Fair enough.
That,
right. That's a good point. But I mean, you see what I'm doing there. That many years later, despite the denial of the person who's charged, you have sympathy for one person, but you are asking for more sympathy in this case for Michael Flager. You know that people wait a long time, often, before they come out with accusations, you know, the revelations about sexual abuse.
Yes, and that's why I think we've gotten rid of the statute of limitations in many areas for this kind of thing. That we used to have, you know, like a 10-year or something like that if you didn't bring charges, and I believe those have been eliminated because so many people wait so long to do this. And I also, you know, I'm also very wary of those in his parish and his community who automatically leap to his defense and say, "There's no way this man could have done this. This is not the man we know. This is impossible. We're standing with him." That makes it harder for victims of any person, any adult authority figure, to come forward when they know that they're going to be piled on and discredited and disbelieved. And I'm just basically saying, I don't think one should take a position. I think one should keep an open mind about this, because let's take it away from Father Flager. Let's just say it's some person who has an otherwise good reputation. The people who do this, who do sexually exploit children, are very careful about covering their tracks. And so you would not look, you know, you can't like spot a child molester walking down the street. They're not the kind of, you don't necessarily just identify them that way. Yeah. So the idea that you would say like, oh, this person, he couldn't have done it, couldn't possibly have done it. This person is lying. I've seen this floated in even in news stories of people saying, whoever this person is trying to get money from the archdiocese or is a political opponent of Father Flager's. That's a hard thing to say about somebody who may have literally been a victim. I mean, it's hard to.
Well, both things can be true. That. You could want money from the Catholic Church as compensation for what you went through, but it may also be true that you were sexually abused. Similarly, Father Flager has done good work, continues to, and will as long as he lives in Chicago, I believe. But it's also true that this man who is trying to find positive outcomes for the city is in fact a person with a dark past. Both of those things can be true as well.
Both of them can be true, although if it is found, if the archdiocese conducts this investigation and finds that it's more likely true than not, and they remove him from St. Sabina, I don't think he's going to be able to continue doing much in the way of work. He's 77.
And does that influence your thought about his disposition then?
Not at all. Not about whether he's guilty or innocent. No,
sure,
it doesn't at all.
Well, let me ask you this, Eric. So in your piece, you write that according to a May 2017 report from the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, they reviewed nearly 500 investigations into clerical sexual abuse, 500 cases in which church officials had reached a conclusion. And that report categorized 40% of the allegations as substantiated, 8% is unsubstantiated, 52% is unable to prove. Point being that after a thorough investigation, only 40% of the time was the investigation able to conclude that the person did behave as the accuser said. So what conclusion do you draw from that? What are we to make of that?
Well, I think what we're to make of it is that these accusations are very hard to litigate. It's very difficult to know when somebody launches an accusation that's 25, 30, 40 years old to say whether it happened or not. Memory can play tricks on people, and memories can just, you know, not even be there.
Do you think that after a period of time we should say he hasn't done it since? I'll just finish this thought. I'm not advocating for it, but he's had 30 years of good work in the community. Whatever happened then, even if it happened, what are we going to do about it now? the church could pay a penalty, but Father Flager should not be cast aside. Do you have any room for that road, Eric?
No, I don't. I mean, I think if they conclude that he did this, he should not be a parish priest. That would be my be my view. I mean, I'm not Catholic. I don't have a dog in the race, as they say. But it feels like if they substantiate that that happened, there should be no tolerance.
I believe
that.
the saying is a dog in that hunt. By the way, so somebody just said on the thermostat. I'm changing subject, Eric. I got to take a break. Is that okay?
Okay. No, John. This is my show now.
You are the captain now. You are the host now. But hey, guys, on the thermostat, I live in Wisconsin, and our program is they send you $25 gift card per month, $300 a year, if they can control your Nest. Peak times, they take control. Alert on Nest says if you touch, you lose your credit card, your credit. So you set your thermostat to Nest, and then the utility company can turn your air conditioning up, you know, make it warmer in your house. But if you participate, you get a $25 gift card each month, up to $300 a year. But they control your Nest device. I have not heard of that. Well, we got more 90-degree temperatures, speaking of your air conditioning, around this week. And when it's hot like this, is your room, is your home not staying cool enough? Wait until you feel the difference new windows and doors will make. Here's what Brenda and I did. We called Next Door and Window, 844-600-NEXT. We got the free consultation. They come out to your house. It is a no-obligation, no-pressure consultation. This is a family-owned business. Thousands and thousands of windows and doors are placed throughout Chicagoland. They're going to bring you some fiberglass windows that will stay snug and tight and last up to 50 years. They're proud of the trust they've built and their BBB Torch Award for business ethics. And you'll appreciate their no-pressure consultative approach. Right now, buy one and get one 30% off the windows and doors, plus 18 months of interest-free financing. Remember, too, a portion of every sale will benefit the Sheila A. Doyle Foundation, which provides hope, healing, and educational opportunities for children who've lost a parent or sibling to homicide. Call 844-600-NEXT. Visit nextwindow.com. Eric Zorn publishes on Substack a newsletter called The Picayune Sentinel. He's part of our Mincing Rascals podcast panel. We'll record another episode tomorrow. If you email ericzorn@gmail.com, he will sign you up for free. Did you see the editorial headline in the Tribune today, which is the very topic the Rascals talked about a week ago? Do elected officials owe their constituents health reports? And I say they do. What's your thought about that, Eric?
Well, I've said they do also. I think that when you're in a position of casting votes and running people's lives, in effect, that you owe them sort of some basic health information like that, just like I think you owe them some basic tax information. We need to be transparent, I think, if we're in public office.
Yeah. And so the examples we cited on our podcast were Donald Trump, Joe Biden. How candid were either of their camps about their existing or previous medical problems? Senator Mark Kirk from Illinois suffered a stroke and I think was largely unheard from for a year, to say nothing of Mitch McConnell's case. A lot of people thought he was on life support and wasn't going to be able to sit up and take a picture with his wife. He was. But, okay, why is he away? That Representative Tom Keene from New Jersey, you know, came out and said that it was a personal medical matter. I think if you are a member of Congress, your medical matters are not personal, Eric.
No, I agree with that. I'm not sure I would lump Mark Kirk in that litany there. I thought that, as my memory is, that Mark Kirk was much more forthcoming about his condition. That I remember him appearing at the Tribune at editorial board sessions, and he was clearly physically impaired. But, you know, his mind still seemed to be working. And I think that he was pretty open about having had a stroke. But, you know, there might have been a time where he was hiding it. I don't know. But, yeah, I think that when you're in these positions of power, that you ought to, you know, be able to provide a candid and neutral evaluation from a physician about your mental and physical state.
And if either of them so compromise your ability to do your job, process issues or physically vote. Remember, no matter what happens to Mitch McConnell's mind, like say he is actually reading the papers and having those famous 20-minute conversations, he doesn't get to vote unless he can be on the floor of the Senate. You can't vote remotely, which I think is nonsense. What do you think about that? Do you think that if you're staying in a hospital, but let's assume Mitch McConnell is able to process these things, do you think he should be able to vote over Zoom, Eric?
I do think so. I mean, it seems like these rules are rules that probably predate even electronic communication, that they may go back even, before telephones even. And there'd be no way of saying, well, is that really the senator from Arkansas who's voting for his home, or is that one of his staff, or is that someone who's hijacked his phone line? I think there would be a way of verifying that.
How about it?
Technology now, you could do that. So that if we know that Mitch McConnell is conscious, then he should be able to vote via Zoom or some other secure technology in the Senate. It would seem to me if the technology is there to verify that it is actually him at the keyboard, then yeah, sure, why not?
You know, I don't know that Lindsey Graham factors into this. I'm sure he didn't. It sure seems like he did not know that he was, teetering on the brink there, and then he suddenly passes away. We don't have as much information yet as I suppose we'll get, but I'm not too exercised about the lack of transparency right now about Lindsey Graham. I am a little intrigued by then the ability of the governor. Do we have this in Illinois? Would JB then be able to, by himself, appoint a replacement for one of our senators if they were to suddenly fall? Isn't that interesting, right? Like, I'm sure his sister, she sounds, first of all, they had a unique and lovely positive relationship. It's amazing how he helped raise her, etc. But she wasn't elected by the people. What if she goes rogue and says, you know what, I'm not on board all this stuff, and voted differently? She's not going to do that. But my point is, you want representation, and they did not vote for the sister.
No, that's totally true. But you remember Roland Burris. You remember when Governor Blagojevich appointed Roland Burris after Barack Obama was elected president, and all the fuss and feathers around that. It is true in Illinois as well. And I mean, Lindsey Graham's sister is an optician. She may well be a fine person. I have no idea. But she has absolutely no experience to come into the U.S. Senate as a politician, as a legislator. It was a very peculiar appointment. But again, it's only for a few months, so I guess we can't get too exercised about it.
Although she would be able to vote then. Say the SAVE Act comes up, she would be voting on the SAVE Act, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. She'll be voting on everything.
And Mitch McConnell will not be, which is weird, because he is elected. He is serving. But since he can't physically be there, if in a perfect world to me, McConnell would vote and she would not. I don't think either way the votes change. Those are two solid conservative votes. But my point is that you should be able to vote in absentia. And I'm not entirely comfortable with people getting the opportunity to vote when they weren't elected. I'm out of time. Eric Zorn's publication on Substack is called The Picayune Sentinel. Email ericzorn@gmail.com. And let's talk more about these and other things tomorrow on the Mincing Rascals podcast. Sound good?
They're great topics, John. Thanks. Yeah, we'll do that.